Welcome back to episode 11 in our special series, Advancing Nitrogen Smart from University of Minnesota Extension. I'm Jack Wilcox in Extension Communications, and today we're talking all about fall application with Extension educator Brad Carlson and Extension Nutrient Management Specialist Dan Kaiser. Brad, what's the first thing farmers should know about applying in the fall? For example, what's the difference in N efficiency at the 50-degree threshold versus even a 55-degree threshold, and then when have those degree dates happened historically?
Well, the thing we've been trying to drill home for years is that the soil temperature should be at 50 degrees. The conversion to nitrate is a microbial activity. As you think about the actions of microbes, you know, think about your refrigerator at home. You certainly don't want it above 50 degrees or food's not going to get preserved in it. And the cooler it is, the longer it's going to stay. The soil is just like that. And so when we look at applying nitrogen, we want it to be at that point where microbial life really slows down. That 50 degrees, there's been some questions about what that means when you drill into it. We're talking about a 6-inch depth, so kind of the depth of an anhydrous application. And so it's worth noting that the National Weather Service's standard reporting stations across the United States are actually at 4 inches and 8 inches. They're not at 6. And so what we often say is if you get the data for 4 and 8, just take the average between the two. There's, you know, typically in the fall, the 8's going to be maybe a little warmer than the 4 because it stays warmer, deeper. You know, it takes a lot of energy to change the temperature of water. And so there's kind of that buffering, but the temperature is not going to be that far apart between the two. But that's actually the 50 degrees. And the other thing about it is we're looking for it to be 50 and stay below. Okay, you don't have a crystal ball. However, we kind of know based on some of our climate averages, you know, that if we get a little cold snap and it's, say, early October and the soil gets to 50, it's probably going to get back above it again. You know, you probably got a pretty good feeling by the time we get to the third week of October. Look at the temperature. If it's 50, you'll get the 7-day forecast and it's going to stay cool. It's probably going to stay there. You know, if the 7-day forecast says we're going to get an unusually warm stretch, it's going to get up to 90 someday, it's probably not going to stay there. So even though you can't predict the future, you know, you can usually get a pretty good idea when that is.
And really, to be clear, is that the nitrification process doesn't stop at 50. It slows down considerably at 50. So it really, if you start looking at where we get no nitrate accumulation, that's really not until we get to freezing and when the soils are completely frozen. But again, at 50 degrees, we're just less concerned that the accumulation is going to be such where we're going to get a vast majority of our ammonia converted over to nitrate. So that's kind of where that comes into play, is that it slows it down substantially at that point, but it doesn't necessarily eliminate. And that can be important because we do see some years where we'll get some warm snaps in, you know, late November, and really there's always some questions from growers on what kind of loss potential we should expect or what kind of conversion potential we should expect. And, you know, really, and even in some of those years where we may not get our ground completely frozen, I'm not really as concerned as long as the nitrogen was applied below 50.
Well, the other aspect about it, Dan, is, you know, we look at the loss of nitrate. You know, the percentage of the nitrogen that's converted to nitrate is a portion of that, but then also how long of time it's present in the soil. So if you're applying when the soil temperature is too warm, you know, not only is it going to happen faster, it's got more time to lose because you're talking a week or two earlier, you know, and so you're adding to that time length where there's risk also. So, you know, that's something to consider also with that. Farmers ask sometimes, how do we get this? You know, our research stations, a lot of them have soil temperature data you can find on the website. I know the SROC is probably the Waseca, Southern Research and Outreach Center. Waseca is the one that's probably hit the most. I think the other ones do have that available also. I'm pretty sure Lamberton and Morris do, at least, you know, we look at the in kind of the corn production zone in Minnesota. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture also has that available on their website. They used to have a really neat feature that was part of their runoff risk advisory website. Now, last year when I looked at it, that was disabled, so I don't know if that's back and functional or not right now. But that actually used a map across the state to kind of look at how the temperature was different from one part of the state to the next. So you can kind of go, you can go on the Department, Minnesota Department of Agriculture website, which is mda.state.mn.us, and you can just use their search and look for soil temperatures, or you can look for the runoff risk advisory and look for that. I know the soil temperature one just simply listed soil temperatures across the state. It didn't show the pretty maps we did, but when I put together this information for our advanced session on climate, I had gone in to the mapping feature that was on the runoff risk advisory, and I pulled some maps for different days. And so I started on that one year, I started on October 7th, and we saw that the temperatures were pretty warm across the state. By October 15th, we saw that the 50-degree temperature had migrated to about halfway down in the state, although also recognize that when you draw a line halfway across the state, most of what's north of that doesn't have a lot of ag in it other than the Red River Valley, although that was pretty warm too. But we had a warm patch after that, and so I pulled it 3 days later on the 18th, and most of that area then had gone back above 50 again. So that's, I guess that's a point worth noting, is that there's some instability in the first half of October regarding that. By the 20th, it kind of moved so that about the northern one-third of the state, again, a lot of that area is not even much of an ag production area. However, one day later, it got cold on October 21st. It had gone down halfway across the state, down the western side of the state, and then just a couple days later, again, on October 25th, the entire state was below. So it tends to happen pretty fast. When we get late into October, that's kind of what we see. Typically speaking, the first day below 50 degrees, when you're about halfway across the state, or maybe roughly about St. Cloud north, we're typically looking at somewhere around between the 10th and the 15th, 16th, 17th, a lot of the southern Minnesota, south central Minnesota, were probably more into the 20s, 22 to 25, 27 on average. But of course, things are rarely average. It's just kind of an idea, getting an idea on what that looks like. The actual average date at Waseca for the last 30 years or so is October 18th. But again, that's going to vary a lot. It's been as early as the 7th of October, and it's been as late as like the 28th or the 29th. So it really kind of does depend on the year. Now, the other thing to remember, and I've talked about this in the past, is it takes a lot more energy to change the temperature of water than it does to air. So if the soils are wet, that change in soil temperature is going to be a lot slower. However, it's going to be more stable too. You're not going to see it bouncing around on a warm day or a cold day. And so that's also something to think about. One of the things that I did as part of our advanced Nitrogen Smart curriculum, looking at adapting to climate, is trying to calculate based on some of the published research and some of the tabular value. And of course, this is all just approximations because each situation is going to be on its own. But what the effects were of applying nitrogen early. We get this all the time. It's amazing, Dan. I know we've talked about this before. How often we'll get these phone calls, I had so-and-so, they're already putting nitrogen in the field. Well, yeah, we know that's going on, but we're not nitrogen police, so there's nothing we're really going to do about that. But let's take a look at that. If you look at applying the nitrogen in the fall at 55 degrees instead of 50, so which that doesn't seem like it should be that big of a deal, but if you actually look at the rates of nitrification based on soil temperature, it kind of is. And so, there's some data that looks at rates of conversion to nitrate. And so what we would see happen, if it's at 55 degrees for 10 days, if you apply to 10 days and it was 55, then 10 days later, finally got to 50, you'd see that approximately 25% of that nitrogen was already converted to nitrate in that 10 days. So you've already had about a fourth of that nitrogen move. The amount that changes because the rate of conversion to nitrate slows so much from 50 degrees down to the point of freezing, the actual amount that changes between 50 and freezing is only more like 15%. And so, you know, that's pretty significant that that 10-day early got you 25%, whereas you only had 15% change the whole rest of the year until the soils froze, you know. So roughly speaking, you know, you're looking at the difference of 40% versus only 15% convert nitrate by when you applied that 10 days earlier at the temperature of 55 degrees. You know, the other aspect of this is because our recommendations typically include applying a nitrification inhibitor with anhydrous in the fall, you know, that stuff also wears off over time. And so, you know, Dan did some calculations on that, looking at some of the kind of the old research on nitropyrin and the time and its degradation and so forth. And, you know, roughly speaking, if you calculate the application rates of nitropyrin, you know, based on its concentration in the soil, it ends up being at about 2 parts per million. The literature indicates that it still works at about 1 part per million. So if we hit the point where about 50% of the nitropyrin that was applied is degraded, it's probably not functioning real well anymore. So if you applied with the nitropyrin, you applied 10 days early, you thought, well, I'm going to put on a nitrification inhibitor. You actually saw about 20% loss of that nitrification inhibitor in that time too. And so, you know, that didn't really buy your way out. You just, you know, lost the kind of some of the period of effectiveness of that product.
And I'm going to put just something in here, the fact that Brad's talking about nitropyrin specifically. I mean, there are other nitrification inhibitors. Centuro is the one that's out there now. It's not nitropyrin. It's a different product. We don't know a lot about that one. And that's kind of the issue in terms of the conversion with that. So if you take the numbers that we're giving, just it isn't the same for those particular products. And there's some other products out there that, you know, if we look at what does tend to work, it's nitropyrin is kind of been the main one. So there's some other things out there that I just don't put a whole lot of stock in because of we just don't have a lot of data with that. So just be careful with that. If you're looking at a lot of these numbers that they're really specific to a specific material and something that we know that works. And nitrification is the key when it comes to a lot of these issues. When we talk about soil temperature, we also have another inhibitor with nitrogen, which is urease inhibitors, and that's a whole different process. And that actually isn't affected by temperature as much as nitrification. So, you know, looking at it, if you're looking at products, you're looking at materials, you have to know what you're applying and know what you're trying to do. And, you know, specifically here, what we're talking about with fall application really is delaying nitrification, because I think we've talked about this before, is what we want to try to do is maintain the most ammonia or the greatest amount of ammonia applied from the fertilizers. It's the most fertilizers that are applied are going to be in the ammonia form in the fall and into the spring as much as possible, because we know that those, at least that ammonia form, isn't going to be as subject to leaching.
Right. And so, you know, that's really the key. And the loss process of nitrogen, while they're water-based, they also are dependent on the nitrogen turning into nitrate, because either leaching or denitrification, in both cases, those processes happen when the nitrogen is turned into nitrate. And so really what we're trying to do is just simply avoid it being nitrate, because then you can avoid it being lost. And so in addition to, you know, the soil temperature in the fall, you know, the soil temperature in the spring also plays a key. So we look at, you know, there's some parts of the U.S. where they say, you guys actually apply nitrogen in the fall, really? And it's like, well, yeah, but it's so cold and it's frozen a big part of the year. If you look at the temperature averages in Minnesota, and if we say that the conversion to nitrate, the nitrification, it stops. It doesn't technically stop, but in essence, it stops when the soil's frozen. That happens in the spring. So if we look at the averages for when the frost comes out in the soil and the soil temperature finally hits 50 degrees, that's 53 days typically. So there's another 53 days where, you know, we're not really rapidly nitrifying. However, you know, the point being, if you apply it early in the fall and it's already nitrate, well, it doesn't matter. Now it's subject to be lost. And so, you know, so that's kind of a big deal too. And so on average, using some of the tabular data, if you applied anhydrous in the fall at 50 degrees, you know, what we would typically see in the, you know, we talked about that roughly about 15% would convert to nitrate between the time it's applied at 50 degrees and the time it freezes, that extra 53 days in the spring, that is about another 20%. So you're looking at about 35% conversion just on your own if you're following best practices. Now, the thing about it is, if you applied that 10 days early, now instead of it being 35%, it's 60%. You know, we look at how wet it typically is in the springtime. You know, that's what really puts the loss of that fall applied nitrogen at risk.
And just remember, you're spending that additional cost for the nitropyrin, so you want to make it work as much as possible. And it's one thing we're not talking specifically about in this podcast, but we do have some data that we do show during the Nitrogen Smart program talking about degradation of nitropyrin, which is microbial degradation, which is impacted by temperature. So, I mean, just like when it comes to the nitrogen, is when you start looking at degradation, is that it's going to slow the cooler the soils are. So that's one of the things, if you start looking at a product like nitropyrin, that early application, why we tend to see greater losses is just because it degrades a lot quicker and you just don't get the actual benefit for it. So that's one of the things, you know, looking at this with some of these numbers that Brad's throwing out there, is you've got to remember is that there is a temperature component when it comes to nitropyrin degradation. The other thing is a lot of these numbers really are focused on higher clay soils, because we know that, especially with how nitropyrin adsorbs to soil, that it does better with the adsorption on higher clay soils versus silt loam soils. So, you know, still looking at areas that we know, like some of our silt loams in the southeast, we don't recommend fall application in those areas due to a lot of other issues, but you're not going to get the hold of products like nitropyrin as well. So, you know, it's not just as simple, and a lot of these numbers we throw out there are really kind of contingent on certain things when it comes to soil types or application timing, for sure.
Yeah, you know, and we're doing some calculations just based on, you know, some published research. Obviously, circumstances are going to be different as far as compaction, the dynamics of the soil, of the temperature, the, you know, soil moisture. There's going to be all kinds of other factors. So, for sure. And so we're only talking about rough approximations. This is not like, this is exactly how this happens everywhere. You know, we're just doing some calculations so you get a feel for what this kind of looks like. When we looked at, you know, I mentioned earlier, so they're looking at nitropyrin needing to be present at that, you know, above 1 part per million to be effective. And if it's applied at 2 parts per million, having a 50% degradation at that point kind of stops, isn't quite as effective as it used to be. If you use that tabular data from, you know, some of that basic research, that calculates out to, if you apply it at 50 degrees temperature and you use kind of the climate averages and how long, you know, the temperature stays cool and so forth, that keeps it effective until what, April 17th. Well, that's right in the sweet spot of when we start planting corn. And that's one of the reasons why it's part of our recommendations for southern Minnesota. You know, so that's kind of it's really good news, really, you know, provided it didn't get warm early or something else that happened. You know, the thing about it is, though, as I mentioned earlier, in our scenario, if we applied 10 days early because we ended up losing so much of that in the fall because the soil temperatures are warm, then at that point, the data wears off is more like March 28th. And that's several weeks before we're out in the field. And so now all of a sudden we are at risk because we know how wet it can be that time of year. And so that's, you know, that's something to think about. One of the other things that's been sort of part of this stuff is how long the soil stays frozen. We know that nitrification, it doesn't really approach zero until the soil temperature is freezing. The number of days that the soil stays frozen, or I should say that the date that the soils freeze and then the number it stays frozen has been changing a lot because of how wet it's been getting in the fall. You know, maybe not so much for the last few years. We've had some strange dynamics with fall soil moisture or moisture overall, really, the last several years. But we had about a good 10-year stretch there before that where it was fairly consistent. It was fairly wet in the fall. And so the thing you have to realize then when it's wet in the fall is, one, is that the soil is going to freeze later because it takes, you know, just takes more energy for the energy to be extracted, I guess you should say, for the soil to freeze. But the other trend that we've seen with that is then the soil stays frozen longer because it takes more energy and more heat in the spring to melt that frozen water, the ice, than it would if you're just simply heating up the air and the soil particles. And so, you know, how many days are there, you know, between 50 degrees and freezing? You know, typically, you know, what we're looking at least with that Waseca is about 50 days. It's going to vary a little bit. You know, the other thing to think about is what's the average amount of precip we get in the fall. So we oftentimes have people say, well, we got to do this fall application because I just don't have time to get my nitrogen applied. Well, I average in 50 days. You know, that's a pretty good window. We have been getting, you know, on average about 5.5 inches of rainfall during that window also. So I guess, yeah, that's something to think about. But in general, you know, we just don't see the great urgency to have to be out there a couple of weeks early. You know, just in general, there's with 51 days average, there's plenty of time to get that done. There has been a trend line of the soil staying frozen later in the spring. You know, that kind of also, there may be some play in there with the recent trend to more urea. It is, you know, a little bit more difficult to get anhydrous put on in the spring if it's staying frozen later. However, we still see a fair amount of spring anhydrous, and a lot of producers report that it's just fine. I mean, it puts you in a pinch for time management, but we aren't really seeing any complication in those spring applications. So the typical day that the frost comes out in the spring, on average, at least at Waseca, is on March 17th on St. Patrick's Day. That bounces around, but if you go back the last 30 years or so, the day the frost comes out at the SROC, at least, has always been in March. It's been as early as the 1st and as late as the 31st, but it's never been in February and it's never been in April, at least for the last 30 years. So that's at least something for reference to be thinking about. You know, once that frost is out, you know, if we're looking at an anhydrous application, you know, we'll be thinking about that we're getting towards our application window. And so then also the question is, well, how many working days do we have after that to do our nitrogen application? So if we say that the application window for putting on nitrogen in the spring, you know, prior to planting, roughly from about March 20th to April 30th, we don't really know, you know, in March. That's kind of a bonus if you're able to get out there in March. However, based on some of the ways we define working days, part of that's just the USDA crop reports, because that's part of the USDA crop reporting. Typically speaking, you have 3 to 5 working days the first 2 weeks of April. There's about a 40% chance that, you know, 40% of the time is zero, but half the time it's actually 5 or higher. Then if we move to the last 2 weeks of April, it goes to about 3 to 4 working days. There's a 30% chance 1 in 3 is zero. But again, another 50% chance that it's at least 5 or more. But typically speaking, we get about 6.5 days then between May 1st and May 15th to do an application. You know, that's kind of where it plays in as far as putting on urea, because we can cover so much ground so fast with urea, with a spin spreader or with a floater. And so in a lot of cases, that's been working. You know, we will get the people who say, well, we just don't have time in the spring. Well, all the nitrogen in southeast Minnesota goes out in the spring, and they do get around. So, you know, there's usually enough working.
And we've got a lot of flexibility with urea. That's one of the things with especially with the urease inhibitors, just the surface application post-planting does work. I think where some people do get caught is they just wait too long and then think that they need to delay those applications to later in the growing season. And when it comes to working days, I mean, I think that's really the only way we're going to be able to make this work. If we would have to go to shift more towards a spring application system across the state, is really looking at some of these in-season options. I said, with urea, that's one thing that we do tend to have more flexibility. So there's some options out there. It's just urea is more problematic, especially for fall application. I just do not recommend it for any applications in the fall, just because of the loss pathways and the way it converts. It's far more of a risk than anhydrous ammonia. So just one thing got to think about with that, especially we start talking about working days, is that, you know, we don't necessarily have to have all our nitrogen on right before, especially if you're corn following soybeans. Right at planting. So, you know, looking at some application window stretching and post-planting would give us some flexibility, particularly with product like urea.
So I guess just to kind of take this up to planting time, we've talked a lot about, you know, the average days and how long it is. The average day we hit 50 degrees soil temperature, at least at Waseca, is May 1st. You know, so you're right, you know, basically right there at corn planting time. And, you know, at that point, we're starting to convert a lot of our nitrogen to nitrate, but that's fine. If you look at the dynamics of nitrogen loss, unless it's saturated, typically we're getting to the point where the plant's going to start taking it up. And so we're in pretty good shape, you know. So just kind of to wrap things up with the, you know, our scenario previously, you know, if you applied 10 days early in the fall, if you use nitropyrin, it's probably gone on the 28th of March and it's been long gone. You know, on the other hand, if you just simply wait until the soil temperature got to be 50 degrees, you know, we do look at that product as working fairly well.
Brad Carlson, Extension Educator, and Dan Kaiser, Extension Nutrient Management Specialist, thank you both very much for this information. If you have a question or comment for either Brad or Dan, please email us at nutmgmt@umn.edu. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Advancing Nitrogen Smart is proud to be supported by the farm families of Minnesota and their Corn Checkoff investment through Minnesota Corn.